Hello, WJMSRadio.com, where radio is reimagined. Welcome to the premiere episode of the newest podcast in the WJMS family. It's called Fired Up, and it is all about things political. My name is Steve, and I will be your host each week as we explore politics and how it works here in the United States. Now, I should tell you right off the bat that this show is not going to be about politicians per se. If they are directly related to the subject we're going to be discussing, then yes, we are going to be talking about them. However, it's not going to be about who's sitting in that house on Pennsylvania Avenue. It's not going to be who's in charge of the Senate or in command of the House or what the latest tweet or Facebook post or Instagram or whatever is all about. We're going to be pulling the curtain back and taking a look at what our political system is, how it is constructed, and how we can reclaim it. We're going to be discussing the political landscape, the mechanics, the engineering, the people behind the curtains. We'll be looking at how we impact state and local level system politics and how important that is to getting our democracy back in our hands. Again, unless it's directly contributing to the root discussion at hand, this is not going to be talking about the people. This is going to be talking about how we got where we are. This is going to be talking about things like gerrymandering that have a huge impact on how our political landscape is shaped. This program is going to provide information. We're going to give opinion. We're going to discuss actionable items and instructions on how we can take back our political system and make it do what we want it to do, not what special interests and controlling groups and others want it to be. There won't be a whole lot of discussion around tweets and hashtags and all that other happiness. We are going to work and build on the fact that in the last few years, we have become politically woke, and that's a great thing. We encourage that. We want more of that. However, we're going to take woke to the next level, because once you get woke, then you need to get fired up, and you need to get ready to go, and you need to get ready to do the action and take the steps that are going to move our process forward. So each week, we're going to break our discussion up into two or three segments. There are going to be a couple of discussion segments where we will break down a couple of political-based elements. And then the final section that I will provide to you each week is going to be what I call a call to action. That is, it's going to be something that you need to do at your level, in your community, in your town or your city, in order to begin and continue the process of moving our political system back to where it is supposed to be. I look forward to each week bringing you something new and exciting in the world of politics. And yeah, politics can be exciting. And hopefully give you some action items that you can take and work with your groups, your communities, to help make things better. So without further ado, let's jump off into our first segment. And again, thank you for tuning in and welcome to Fired Up.
Fired up! They're ready to go! Fired up! They're ready to go! Fired up! They're ready to go!
And welcome back to Fired Up. This is Steve, your host, and we are going to dive into our first segment today. We're going to start by looking kind of at the foundation of how we got to where we are. Right now, our country is pretty much divided down the middle with between the extreme left, extreme right, with a large chunk of us sitting squarely in the middle, wondering what the hell is going on. So how did we get here? Well, it's a long process to get to where we are. We're going to take a look at some of the foundations of that. We're going to start with something that is become known as the Southern Strategy, which was actually a process that was kind of spearheaded by Richard Nixon in the 1960s, which makes it more than 50 years old, and was really aimed at consolidating power into what has become the Republican Party from what was the Democrat Party. And in order to understand that, you need to understand that, you know, as you heard the expression, the Republican is the party of Lincoln. Well, up through the, you know, the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, into 60s, it actually was the more liberal-leaning, progressive party in the United States. It was actually the Democratic Party that was much more conservative, much more right-wing, was heavily dominated by a power center that came out of the southern states, and hence they kind of got the nickname of the Dixiecrats, because they were really the party of conservative southern and white people in this country, and really were against a lot of the directions that our country was going in the 60s, with the Vietnam War going on and the civil rights movement going on, and you know, and that led, of course, into women's rights movements and all of the things that we've had, the Voting Act in 1964 and again in 65. All of these things really, really were anathema to what the Southern Democrats were interested in. And en masse, over the course of a couple of election cycles, they actually switched from being Democrats to being Republicans. And that kind of gets us the start of how we got to where we are now. There was a lot more to it, of course, and we're going to look at that. But the Southern Strategy really was the roadmap and the blueprint for how we got to this very right-wing, you know, elements like the Tea Party and you know, elements that are in our Republican political sphere now, really came out of that big upheaval out of the Democratic Party of the 60s into the Republican Party of the late 60s into 70s and beyond. So if you understand that the parties really did flip-flop, then you can get a sense of why our political map is the way it's shaped right now. The second component of that, which was part of the Southern Strategy, was a conscientious effort to really set a solid control base within state and local political circles, that is, local town councils and city councils, state representatives, state senators, governors, to consolidate and achieve a system where they could almost guarantee that their political power would be maintained. And how they came about doing this was through a process called gerrymandering. Now, if you're not familiar with the term, gerrymandering is a process where political districts are drawn to the benefit of one party or another. So let's say you have a political district and there are 100,000 people in it, and you know, 60,000 of those people are Democrat and 40,000 are Republican. However, through the election process, the Republican controls the state legislature and or the governorship, they get to draw the districts every 10 years. It's part of the census process. And, you know, once the census is completed, the state and local legislatures are tasked with reviewing the census data and reassessing the congressional districts. So that's how you get these weird-shaped districts. That's how you get the fact that even though, you know, the Democrats may have won the majority of the vote in a given district, because the Republicans control the shape and content of that district, it actually ends up that they have more political power than the populist Democrats. So if you understand this notion of gerrymandering, then you can begin to understand why, when you look at, you know, maps that are shown on news shows and talk shows, and they show a red state or a blue state, you have to understand that even within those states that are colored all red, there are Democratic voters there, or there are blue voters there. It's just that the districts and the political landscape is shaped by the winning party through gerrymandering to represent, you know, in this case, the Republicans or the red color instead of the blue color. It also gives you a sense of why it is so difficult to unseat an incumbent politician, whether they are Democrat or Republican. There's always a favor that goes to an incumbent simply because they already occupy the office. But we'll talk more about that, down the road. So we go from gerrymandering to states that become, quote, Republican states or Democrat states, end quote, which not only lead to state houses and legislatures and governorships that are one party or the other, but it also leads to federal, congressional representatives and federal Senate representatives and even presidents that are, from one political party or the other, simply because the system that has fed them up through the ranks has been established through this gerrymandering process, through this control of how the voting districts are shaped and therefore how their votes are tallied, into a political structure that favors, in its current form, that favors Republicans, even though they are numerically less Republicans in this country than there are Democrats, by the way. However, because of the way the political system is structured and its infrastructure, they actually have an overwhelming amount of power as compared to the more numerous Democrats. So you kind of get the sense of how we are, and realize that it took 50 years for this process to start, be implemented and strengthened and reinforced and reworked and tweaked and all of that to get us to where we are now, to get us a conservative-leaning Senate, a conservative-leaning White House, and even arguably a now conservative-leaning Supreme Court and lower courts. One of the things to understand is that, and we'll talk about this too in one of our upcoming episodes, the party in power gets to pick the judges. And, they get to pick the judges at the Supreme Court level, at the federal court level, and the local parties, your local state legislatures, your local governors appoint and or support the election of your judges, along with your school boards, your sheriffs, your county assessors, and all the political people and all of the people that operate our political system in this country. So, it's all one big ball of twine. And hopefully, as we go through our program here, I'm going to help you unwind that ball of twine. So if you understand that the Southern strategy is the blueprint and gerrymandering is one of the components, the mechanisms for implementing that blueprint, when you combine that with the transfer of the parties between Democrat and Republican in the 60s and 70s, and all of the things that have happened in the years since then, you can begin to understand what the impact of the strategies and effects that were put in place to control the vote. And by that, I mean things like, voter suppression laws and the Jim Crow policies of the South and other parts of the country, and all of the impediments that have been put in place to keep one group or another as far away from the polls as possible. And there have been just some horrendous strategies put in place. The news has been full of them over the last few years. You can see now how we kind of get to where we are. This was a goal. This was an ideal that was worked on and implemented. And for the most part, it has been implemented to favor conservative, white, right-wing politicians in a national effort to offset the numerical advantage of Democratic voters over Republican voters. You know, you've heard that when voter turnout is low, this generally favors not only incumbents, but in particular, it favors Republican incumbents, simply because in most areas of the country, Democrats outnumber Republicans, period. So now you can get a sense of why it is important that every effort be made to get every person out to the polls to exercise the vote. And spoiler alert, as we get into my call to action section, this is actually going to be our first call to action. What you can do to make sure that you are prepared to vote when, you know, Election Day 2020 shows up, and, you know, what steps you can take, what you need to do, what you must do in order to make sure that you are eligible, registered, and able to vote, and that you do vote. But we'll talk more about that both in our call to action and upcoming sessions in the program. You know, this is all about, as I said in the intro, this is all about, you know, going beyond being just woke. Now that we are woke, now we've got to get fired up. We've got to get out there and take the action steps. We've got to commit to the strategy that's going to turn this around. And I really, really need to stress, this is not something that's going to be completely solved as of the 2020 election. That's only going to start it. It took 50 years to get us here. It's going to take a long time, not 50 years maybe, but it's going to take a number of election cycles for us to begin to really undo what has been done. So, you know, you need to understand that. And you also need to understand some things we're going to talk about right now as we get a little bit of data to back up the numbers. And, you know, right now, for those of you that are in the 18 to 29 year old segment, in the 2008 election, 51% of you went to the polls and exercised your vote, compared to 61% of 30 to 44 year olds, 69% of 45 to 55 year olds, and 70% of those 60 years old and older. And what happened in the next presidential election cycle was that your 18 to 29 year old vote went from 51% down to 45%, a 6% drop in voter turnout. And that 6% drop actually was maintained into the 2016, the most recent presidential election, compared with 70.9 of 60-plus-year-olds, 66% of, you know, 45 to 64, and 58% of 30 to 44-year-olds. Now, you have to add into that mix one very important statistic. Over the coming decades, the next, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 18 to 29-year-olds are going to become the largest voting bloc in America, more than the baby boomers who are, you know, getting older and, you know, and dying off, and as more and more of the other segments move into that elder status, millennials, 18 to 29-year-olds, are going to have a larger and larger stake. So what that means is that it's going to become more and more and more important for, you know, the new generations coming on board to exercise and participate in the voting process. Because you guys are the ones who are going to be controlling, you know, how this country works, where this country goes, what our policies are going to be, what our cares and concerns as a country are going to be with respect to our people. So as I said, coming up in our call to action, we're going to have a call to action revolving around voting. So I hope that I have at least given you a fundamental understanding of some of the pieces that have led to where we are now. In the remaining minutes of this segment, I think we're going to talk a little bit about something else that kind of goes hand in hand with the structure of how our political system is gamed against us. And, you know, we talked about age demographics. We're going to talk also about racial demographics as well, because that too is driving a lot of the energy in the voter suppression and anti, poor and minority voting efforts that is being undertaken by the party in power currently in this country. If you look at the 2000 election season, the percent of eligible voter breakdowns by race, and this is from a Pew Research Center study, and they looked at white, black, Hispanic, and Asian voters. In 2000, whites made up 76 plus percent of the eligible voting population. Blacks were 11.5%, Hispanics were 7.4%, and Asians were 2.5%. Jump forward two decades, and in the 2020 election, it's now being projected that whites are going to be 66.7% of the eligible voting age population. Hispanics will surpass blacks as being the largest minority group at 13.3%. With blacks behind them at 12.5%, and Asians will roughly double in size to 4.7%. That in itself is an important set of statistics. But what's more telling is that in 2000, 20% roughly of the electorate were persons of color, at least Hispanic, black, and Asian. And in 2020, that number is going to go to nearly 30%, about 34% or so. So if you take those numbers into account, you can kind of get a sense of why there is all of the push around voter suppression and why there is all of the headwinds and the pushback against efforts to increase the number of minority and poor and other underrepresented population groups in the electorate. It goes to the party in power keeping a hold of its power, and they recognize that at some point numerically non-white people in this country are going to outnumber white people in this country, and that frankly worries them. So all the more reason why we need to make sure that we get everyone who can vote out to vote. We need to make sure that we continue this progress toward a more equal distribution of voting power. In addition, it clearly shows why we must do everything we can to make sure that we are addressing this deficiency and reversing it. As I said, this is not going to be something that's going to be solved, with the 2020 election. It's a start. It's going to be the first step as we go to undo this 50-year progression that we've had in this country. But we're going to need to make sure that we are active, that we are, that we are moving and getting our people out to vote and getting that vote counted for every vote that we can. The other piece to remember, and we'll talk about this in an upcoming segment, is that 2020 is also going to be a census year. And again, part of the census is not only just to count our population, but it also is what is used to determine the makeup and populations in our congressional districts. So it is vitally critical that every person, particularly every person of color, is counted in this country. And one other thing I've heard people have said is, don't mark off that you are black, or don't mark off that you are Hispanic. That is absolutely the wrong thing. Mark off who you are. All right. We need to make sure that everybody, every person of color is counted in this country. All right. Don't let them fool you. Don't let them tell you lies that telling them, you know, you're Hispanic is going to put you on some list, or telling them that you're black is going to put you on, you know, the radar, law enforcement or whatever. That's all crap. We need to make sure that everybody gets counted. That's our goal. That's going to be your job, to get you, to get your family counted, to get your friends counted, to make sure that the census accurately reflects what your local neighborhoods look like, so that your congressional districts get drawn with accurate numbers. So as we wrap up this segment, I've given you a lot to think about. I'm going to give you a whole lot more to think about as we go through this. Again, my name is Steve. I want to thank you for being with me through this. I hope that I have achieved the title of the show, that I have gotten you fired up. And as we, you know, get to our final segment of this show and get to our call to action, you'll see that I'm going to give you not only, you know, energy to be fired up, but also things you can do to make sure that you can turn that into a positive, forward-looking and forward-moving action. Until then, we will take a break and come back for our next segment. Thank you for tuning in. Please stay tuned to Fired Up.
Fired up! Get ready to go! Fired up! Get ready to go! Fired up!
And welcome back to Fired Up. This is your guy, Steve, and we're here talking about the mechanics and the underlying machine of politics. As I've said before, I'm not really talking about the people, but I'm talking about the ways that they are controlling our lives. So in the first segment, we talked about some of the history, gave you some information on the Southern Strategy, which is a 50-year-old process that got us where we are right now. If you thought that our current president was the start of all of these problems, you are unfortunately, sadly mistaken. This has been a process that has been ongoing and being built by one political structure to control politics in this country, and it's been going on for more than 50 years. We also talked about gerrymandering, which is that process of dissecting districts to the advantage of a victorious party, not necessarily the party that had the most people who voted in that election. So the political process, it's a game. Unfortunately, it's a game we're not playing very well, if we are playing at all. We tend not to participate. You know, as I gave you statistics in the prior segment, 54% of 18 to 30-year-olds did not vote in the 2016 election. 30% of those 65 and over didn't vote. And as much as half of the age groups in between also did not show up to the polls. And that was a critical mistake. Because of that, that's how we ended up with the administration we have right now and all the problems that we see and the trials and tribulations that we face. And that's just being point blank and obvious. So what does it mean when we don't participate in the election process? And in particular, as I said at the end of the first segment, we want to talk about local politics. The national level politics, yes, they're important. They're absolutely important. But the day-to-day things that impact your life and my life come from the local level. They come from the city councils, from your town councils. They come from your sheriffs, your school boards. They come from your state senators, your state representatives, and your governor. And all of those people are elected by you as part of the normal election cycle. So when you pick someone at the top of the ticket, you've got to pay equal attention to those in the lower tiers of the ticket, because they are the ones that run everything day to day. So what does it mean when, you know, we don't participate in our voting process? It means that the few who do vote control the outcome of the election, control the direction of the political process, control where money gets spent, where things get built, all of these things are done by the people who actually did vote, who actually did pick the people who end up occupying the offices. So when you don't vote, you absolutely guarantee that your voice is not heard, period. You absolutely guarantee that your voice is not being heard. And, you know, elections are critical, critical processes, especially as we talk about and as we come up on the election in 2020, because this is a census year. What that means is that it is the 10-year cycle where the United States of America counts everyone that lives within its borders. And why is that important? Well, I'll tell you why. Number one, because that sets the makeup of the local districts. That sets, you know, where money gets spent, where infrastructure projects get scheduled, all of these things. And the most critical part of this is this census and this counting is not done at the federal level. It is done by your state legislatures and your governor. So if you did not have a vote, if you did not have a voice in putting those people in place, then they don't think like you think. They don't represent you. They don't represent the demographic that you come from. And therefore, they're going to vote what they believe based on the people who elected them into office want them to believe is the best makeup of the district, is the best way to expend funds. You know, and all of these local initiatives that happen are governed by people that we elect into office. Let's dissect that for a second. So, you know, as I explained in gerrymandering in the prior segment, it is simply the process of the victor of the election, whichever party wins the election, gets to draw the district. Now, they will draw that district to favor their party. So if there are 100,000 people in the district and, you know, 60,000 of them voted on one side, and 40,000 voted on the other, then the district gets drawn by whichever side won the election. Now, if of those 60,000 voters, 30,000 didn't show up to vote, so you had 60,000 registered but only 30,000 voted, well, guess what? Those 60,000 people don't get heard because the other side gets to control the district. It's that critical. It also includes things like, where do federal dollars get spent in your district? Is there a improvement program coming? Are they going to fix the roads? Are they going to fix the bridges? Are they going to build a new highway, bringing economic growth to your town or your city? All of these things get decided at the local level and then get requested to the federal government. So by not voting, by not making your voice heard, you are not having a part in that discussion. You don't have a seat at that table. The districts that have the higher vote totals overall are the ones that get the most attention. That's the way it works. It goes even deeper than that. Because the same people that got elected into office by less than the largest majority of voters, they absolutely put in place the programs that we have been facing in voter suppression, in, you know, removing people from the voting rolls, and all of the things that the people in power have been doing simply to keep themselves in power. They want to make sure that as few people of the opposing party get to the polls and vote as possible. There's a story of a town out in the West. I think it was in, I want to say it was either in Arizona or Utah, somewhere out there, where the polling place for the Democratic Party was actually relocated outside of the city limits and away from the bus lines, so that poor people and disenfranchised people and disadvantaged people had an even more difficult time to get to that polling place to vote. And then we had the case down in Georgia, where the person who was in charge of the elections for the state of Georgia was also a candidate for governor. Basically, he was controlling his own show. And he put in place, he removed like 50,000, I believe is the number, voters from the rolls, so that, you know, it even further skewed the voting, the registered voters in favor of his party. These kinds of things happen because the people in power believe they get away with it. And they believe they get away with it because we, the voters in numbers, don't hold them accountable. Now, this is absolutely within our power to change. And it starts with making sure that we get out, get registered, and vote. We can't allow anything to stand in our way. We can't let fear, we can't let division politics, we can't let anything keep us from getting to the polls and exercising that vote. Many of the candidates across the country that have won elections have done so by playing to our fears, playing to those items that divide us, by distracting us. And this goes all the way from the local level all the way up to the presidency. You know, it's really clear that, you know, distraction topics and all of these things that really have no tie to the process of voting and the exercise of democracy in this country were put out there to take us away from being focused on what we need to be focused on. Reacting to fear elements, for those that had a fear that, you know, you go and vote and, you know, immigration was going to be there. All of these rumors that we heard over the course of the last election cycles are all aimed at distracting us. Through these kinds of divisive actions, our voting power gets diluted. You know, letting ourselves be played through racial, economic, or other factors causes us to freeze, to delay our response or delay our actions until it's either too late to do anything or whatever it was that we were opposed to was already in force and it's almost impossible to get it undone. So we're going to talk about things to do when we get to our call to action section, but I just want to stress and emphasize that the number one thing to do is to get to the polls. Get out there. Do whatever it takes. If you need to have, you know, an ID, make sure you've got an up-to-date and valid ID before you head to the poll so that you have it with you. If you need to bring additional documentation, whatever you need to bring, find out what it is and bring it. There's a really great website out there that can give you all of these answers. It's called www.vote.org. You can go there, look up by your state, and then within your state, look up in your district to find out exactly what you need to go and vote. It can also tell you if you are already registered. And if you're already registered to vote, that's fantastic. But make sure that you verify that everything is correct, that your address is correct, that all your information is correct, so that you know that when you walk up to that poll, there's nothing that's going to hinder you from casting your vote. If you need to bring additional documentation, some sites I've heard, you know, you got to bring a utility bill or a phone bill or something to prove your residency, then make sure you have that documentation with you. This is vitally important. We need to get on top of this. The elections, I realize, are 13 months away. But in order to get some of this paperwork, it may take a little bit of time. So please, please, please do not wait to the last minute. Don't sleep on this. Get on it. Get it done. Get it verified. Make sure that your right to vote is intact. And the second thing is make sure that you understand your rights as a voter. All right. Make sure you understand that if there are questions, you have the right to vote with what's called a provisional ballot. There are people that work at the polls who will help you address these issues. Make sure you take advantage of that if you have to. Don't just turn around and walk away. Do everything you can to make sure that your vote gets cast. All right. So as we look at this, you know, and as I said before, this is not a problem that the election in 2020 is going to solve. This is going to be the start of a solution. But, you know, it took 50 years of active measures to get us into this divided country state that we're in right now. It's going to take time to get us out. It's not going to be a one election cycle solution. It's going to take 2, 3, 4. It might take 20 or 30 years. Your children might actually be following in your footsteps and continuing this process to make sure that the democracy is restored to what our founders intended it to be. So, what can we do now to prepare for the upcoming elections in 2020? And by the way, there may be other local elections that happen in between times, and the same rules apply. You got to make sure that you're prepared, that you're up to date, that you understand the issues, that you've done your homework and check the background of the candidates that you want to support, and you make sure that you get that information out there. So, as I mentioned, you can verify your voter registration status and where you need to go vote and what you need to bring at www.vote.org. You can confirm your polling place. You can verify your rights as a voter as to what you need to have and what they can and cannot do to try and stop you from voting. And make sure that you are prepared for that. But the next thing that you need to do, and this is important, get informed. Find out who your local, your city, your town, your county, who your people are who are running for office. Find out what their positions are. Reach out to them. If they have a website or if they have a Twitter feed or whatever, get in touch with them. Find out what their positions are on things that you care about. Make sure that you know that if you're going to support them, that they are going to follow your instructions. All right. Another thing to keep your eye on, look to see if there are ballot questions on the ballot for election day. Read those questions. Understand the issue. Do you agree with it or do you not agree with it? Make sure you're clear who and what is on that ballot and that you understand that the people you are voting for or the issues you are voting for are things that are of concern to you. All right. And let's not forget in 2020 that, oh yeah, there's going to be a top tier election as well. Members of the Senate, some members of the House, you know, and the presidential races will be happening. So we need to pay attention to that too. But just balance that with, you know, the local picture. Because again, whoever sits in the White House or whoever is in control of the Senate or the Speaker of the House of Representatives at the federal level, while they do have some impact on how and the direction our country moves and how that impacts us, the day-to-day nuts and bolts of things that impact our daily lives happen at the local, the state level. And those are crucial elections that we need to pay attention to, and we need to make sure that we are prepared. A lot more to unpack. We're going to be talking about this many times over the coming months, but I just wanted to get you started as we get started with our new show here on WJMSradio.com. And I'm so thankful to them for allowing me this space and allowing me the chance to speak with you. Look forward to continuing and bringing you more information. We're going to talk about some very, very crucial things that have happened over time and things that are going on now. And just want to make sure that I get you the information you need to make sure that we start to turn our democracy back into a democracy. So until next time, this is your man, Steve. Thank you for tuning in. I do appreciate it. I look forward to another opportunity to speak to you on Fired Up.
Well, the first thing I want to say is, mandate my ass. Mandate my ass.
Hey, welcome back to the third segment of Fired Up. This is your man, Steve, and I'm here
in this segment to bring you what we will call and what will happen each week, our call to action segment. Each week I will give you basically a homework assignment. Yeah, you heard me right, homework. In the first two segments of the show, we defined a couple of issues that gave you information on and some background on, and this is the part of the show where we take that information and move it into the action phase, where you take what we've talked about or what I've discussed and find ways in your community and where you live to apply, to effect change, to bring about the change that we want to see. And you know, we will do this each week. So get your pens and papers ready, because we got a couple of assignments to do. Before we get to that, though, we had an event this week, sad, very sad event. We lost a true leader, an icon, a warrior for, you know, for the rights of people, a warrior against injustice and racism and all of the things that seem to be plaguing our democracy today. Congressman Elijah Cummings of the 7th District in Maryland lost his battle with a long illness on the 17th of October, and we deeply, deeply mourn his passing. We send our heartfelt prayers and condolences to his family and friends and colleagues and his constituents and all who looked up to this beacon of light in the House of Representatives. So in honor of Congressman Cummings, we really want to make the first call to action in our show, a call to find out more about who Congressman Chairman Cummings really was, both as a person and as a political leader in our country. Don't just listen to the sound bites. Don't just listen to the tweets. Dig in. Find out, you know, what he stood for. What was his voting record? Listen to his speeches. Listen to, you know, the things that he was passionate about. He was extremely outspoken on issues that affected people of color in this country, that affected, you know, the poor and, you know, minority and other people who were victimized by the rich and powerful in this country. If you saw any of his leadership in the oversight and committee hearings, both in regard to, you know, the investigation into the Benghazi incident with former Secretary Hillary Clinton, up through his questioning of witnesses as we move through and into the current, you know, impeachment and investigation phases with President Trump. Elijah Cummings was a tireless champion of the rights of everyday people. So I give you the assignment of digging in, finding out more, and learning about this man who is probably if not the shining example, one of the shining examples of what we should all aspire to be in terms of our political activity and our involvement in the democratic and political system in this country. So, you know, dig in, find out more, you know, get the facts. Don't just accept what, you know, the media is presenting you. Find out for yourself. You know, that's going to be a recurring theme in our call to action segment, not to accept what is handed to us or fed to us in teaspoons, but to go get the tablespoons of knowledge and information, to go get the mixing spoons, to lick the bowl of knowledge so that we are getting all of the facts and we can make our own judgments. You know, an outspoken critic of the current administration, Before that, he was a leader in the House of Representatives. He was the first African American to sit as the president of the Senate pro tem in his state of Maryland. And that position is the first person that gets called when the ranking president is out of the office. That is the person that sits in the Senate to run the meetings. And he was the first African American to hold that. During the riots in Baltimore, when, you know, communities in Baltimore were on fire and burning, he led a march through the streets with a bullhorn, calling for people to calm down, to back down, to act responsibly, to act peacefully. So he's not just a man of words, he was a man of action. And, you know, I am diminished, our country is diminished by his passing. You know, we mourn his loss. There will not be another like him in a very long time. But we move forward and continue his legacy by doing the work and continuing the work to completion that he started. So with that, I offer my heartfelt condolences to his family, to his wife and three children. I offer my thoughts and prayers to his constituents, to his colleagues, to his many, many, many friends and admirers all over the country and, in fact, around the world. Congressman, you will be missed. In keeping with the legacy of Congressman Elijah Cummings, our next call to action deals with what we discussed in the prior segment, and that is voter registration and voter participation for the entire election ticket as we move toward the November elections. As I told you in the prior segment, you know, it is important for us to be focused and pay attention to what's going on at the top of the ticket, the race for president, the races for, you know, our national congressmen and senators. But we cannot and must not lose focus on the down ticket races, the governors, the state senators, the state legislatures, you know, your local mayors, your city councils, your town councils, your sheriffs, your school boards. All of these critical elements of our system of government are part and parcel of our everyday lives. Yes, as I've said, the national elections are important. It sets a direction that our country goes in, and it sets a tone, so to speak, of how our political system will function. But it is these everyday local office holders and state office holders that really determine how our system works to our benefit. As I've mentioned, this year coming up, this 2020 election, this is a census year. And the census feeds the census feeds our congressional district makeup for the next 10 years. That is, whoever is in command of your congressional district in conjunction with your other representatives in the state will shape not only economic policy, but environmental policy, educational policy, infrastructure. Everything that occurs that is driven by our government boils down to what happens in state and local elections. It is vitally important that you dig in, find out what's going on in your district, find out the issues, find out the ballot questions, query the candidates, ask them questions. If someone is asking for your vote, the first question out of your mouth needs to be, why? Why should I vote for you? And if they cannot give you a solid, definitive answer, then they do not deserve your vote. Doesn't matter whether, you know, you're a Republican, you're a Democrat, independent, socialist, communist, whatever party, the candidates that you elect need to reflect your views, your opinions, and your desires for what goes on where you live. Same thing is true with your local representatives. For example, if you are not happy with what your children are being taught in school, That is controlled by the school board. And guess what? The school board are elected. You pick them. Same thing with your city council. If your city is not servicing your needs as a resident effectively, then you need to be engaged with your city council or your town council or your selectman council or whatever the local governing body is called where you live in order to effect that change. It's a numbers game, my friends. The more people that register, the more people that vote, the more people that participate, the more people that make their voices heard, that communicate with your local representatives, the more influence and impact you have on the day-to-day life that you live in your district. It's just that simple. So your homework assignment in the second part of our call to action is, as we said in the prior segment, check the status of your voter registration. Go to www.vote.org and look up your voter status by state and by local district at that website. You can get information, if you are not registered, on how to get registered. If you are registered, you want to make sure that you verify the information that goes with your registration. Do they have your address correct? Do they have your contact information correct? Can you walk up, provide what is needed for identification purposes? Some locations, or most locations, require at least a photo ID in order to register to vote on election day. You need to make sure that your ID is up to date and that it is valid. If you are required to provide additional proof of residency, such as utility bills or a phone bill or a lease if you rent an apartment, make sure you have those materials with you. Whether you think you need them or not, have them with you so that if you are questioned, you can provide the information that verifies that you do in fact live in the district, you are in fact entitled to vote there, and make sure that you do vote. If for some reason your right to vote or you are declined to vote on election day, there are workers at every polling place who can provide you assistance in getting the issues resolved or getting you what is called a provisional ballot so that you can still cast your vote and work to correct the issues after the fact so that your vote will be counted into the final tally. Do not let them turn you away from voting without a fight. Do not let them put any impediments, any roadblocks in your way to keep you from the polling place. It is so critical in this upcoming election and every election that we exercise this right to vote. This is the engine that drives our system. It is not about the people who sit in those buildings. It's about us. This is our country. Our representatives need to do what we tell them to do. So in order for that to happen, you need to make sure that you are ready to vote, that your voting credentials are correct, and that you get to those polls. Come hell or high water, you need to be at that polling place and vote on election day. Then let's also not forget that elections happen all the time. There are elections for special ballot issues. There are elections voting for funding initiatives. There are, as there will be in the 7th District, ultimately there will be an election to replace Congressman Cummings. People get elevated to positions in government and their seats become vacant. Those seats need to be filled, and that is done by voting. So pay attention. Keep abreast of what's going on. Don't let anybody tell you who to vote for. Do your research, do your homework, do your diligence, make your choices. All right, so those are our calls to action for this episode. Again, we mourn the loss of Chairman Elijah Cummings, and we can best honor his legacy by carrying on his work and making sure that our voices are heard when they need to be heard. So I want to say thank you for listening. This is the first show. I look forward to many, many more. And, you know, let's get out there. Let's get active. Let's take being woke to the next level. Let's get fired up and let's get ready to go. Take care, everyone. I will talk to you soon.